You know, eventually I watched the highlight reel of the touch game and I was like, damn right I was MVP. You damn right I was. Eventually, my initial feeling was like, okay, no, imposter syndrome. And I was like, okay, whoa, take a step back. Let's watch the highlights, check the stats. I was like, actually, you were MVP. Well done.
We are back, we are back, we are back. It's a big vibe with Kevin Ty. This is 30 coming for 30. From out wide.
Oh,
you know, we keep we swish gang out here. Every episode.
New Splash every, Brothers.
Every bit of, content that we're giving you is a dime. And we're really loving it. Today we are going to be speaking about something that I think a lot of people go through, might not readily admit, but I think we've either been the person or have been nearest a person who has had to deal with imposter syndrome. I know, Ty, that you wanted to chat about this. I think you had an instance or something that happened in your week that you'd like to touch on and just give a bit more context in. So for everyone listening, watching, we're going to be chatting about imposter syndrome. We'll be going through a few examples, both personal that we've both experienced, maybe why people go through it, what the reasons there are for it, as well as giving some indication as to what the opposite would be. So we have a very interesting effect that is the complete opposite or the polar opposite of what imposter syndrome is. And then, as always, we always obviously end off with something wholesome to wrap up our lovely episode. So for context, I'm going to give a brief definition of what imposter syndrome is. So imposter syndrome is the condition of feeling anxious and not experiencing success internally, despite being high performing in external objective ways. This condition often results in people feeling like a fraud or a phony and doubting their abilities. So like I said, yes, I think a lot of us have either experienced it personally or known someone that has experienced this at some point in their lives. Ty, I'm going to throw the ball down to you. Give us some context, man, if you've experienced this.
Yeah. So this week was an interesting week in many regards. I was... The seniors at the school graduated on Monday, organized their graduation. It was a huge event. It was a successful event. And as part of it, you know, it gets a bit emotional and you talk to your students and they were like, you know, thanking me. One of them said a speech that was directed at me and she was just thanking me for everything throughout the year. When I was saying goodbye to all the students, you know, they were thanking me for everything that we've gone through together, you know, as a class and as a group of people. And it really started bringing up this feeling of like, you know, like a lot of people question, like, are we good enough? We doubt it a lot, despite, you know, the whole point of imposter syndrome is like, despite multiple pieces of evidence that might show you that it's not true, you still feel it. So this week I was feeling it particularly because they were all like, wow, you know, you've been so amazing to us this year. You've been, you know, not just as a teacher, but as a leader and et cetera, et cetera. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, this doesn't feel true. This doesn't feel like me. And here I am with 25 students, maybe not all of them, but most of them are saying these things to me. And it's like, I didn't believe it, you know, and it kind of sucked, obviously. So I was thinking, and then that's when I was like, okay, you are experiencing imposter syndrome. And then, as things usually are, you know, things normally happen in like not just one thing, but several things happen. Then on Wednesday, I played a touch match and, you know, felt like, okay, yeah, I played pretty well, whatever. And then afterwards, the captain of our team was like, okay, we've given you MVP for the match. And I was like, nah, like that doesn't feel right. Like I don't deserve it. Like in my mind, I didn't say anything, but that's how I felt. And then immediately I was like, this is the same thing. This is, you have somebody saying to you, as a team, we've decided that you are the MVP of this game. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, ah, no, I'm not that good. Like, yeah, it can't be, right? So as I said, and then also now with our just recently released episode with Nato, you know, you sit and you're speaking to somebody who's so I'm not going to lie, accomplished and everything. And you look, you know, and you start thinking to yourself like, wow, this person is, you know, my age and he's the head chef. He's made it, you know, so far. Like, you know, should I be further? Should I be doing more? You know what I'm saying? So as always, they say things happen in threes. So they did. And it made me, I was like, you know what better place than to come onto our episode, onto our platform, and to talk about it. You know, I don't know, do you have any kind of perspective of imposter syndrome, if you think that you maybe have it, an example or something?
Oh yeah. I think for me personally, imposter syndrome, yeah, it happens. I'm not gonna say fairly frequently, but aspects of it happening, or let me say that the environment that it happens in is generally in the work environment. So when you're either starting a new position, or you are promoted to a different position, or you're in a different department, I think that initial migration into that role is definitely a place where imposter syndrome lives and dwells and thrives. I mean, yep. As we saw in the explanation or the definition of them, that we have the capability to do the job. It's just something that casts that seed of doubt in your mind. And you think, am I given this position? Why am I given this position? Why am I given this praise? And
that's
think
not me.
I exactly. It's like, surely I'm not that good. I mean, you spoke about sports. Yeah. Generally, especially when you're playing a team with stars and you outright, I think it definitely comes back to a confidence aspect. One, two, praise. Maybe it's something that we haven't received along the way or not often enough. And I think from a work point of view is a change that I'm starting to see, where I guess people aren't only given praise or a sense of backing when it's just appraisals. It's now being moved into a monthly or a weekly thing where you are kind of put in the spotlight to be recognized for your wins, for your accomplishments in that week, for a specific project with a certain client, whatever it is. There's a lot more emphasis on giving appreciation.
Do you have something like that in your workplace now, where it's like a praising moment that they set aside for every person?
So it's something that I've actually looked to bring in. It's something that I discussed with my boss and previously. So my previous employer, we had a monthly awards opportunity or event where you'd give praise to people who have performed exceptionally with their specific brand, and that's both on an individual and a team basis.
Oh, cool.
And now in my current employer, it's something that I just like to note each week. So I say, well, Tyler, oh man, you handled that meeting so well. It was your first time speaking to a client directly, and I just want to give you some credit there. It's not easy to stand up during a meeting with completely, you know, people that you haven't met before. So,
like in a new
do you have the guts to step into public speaking, which is something that's probably the second biggest? I think I heard a stat previously that it's the second biggest fear in the world, second to death.
Yes, yeah, I actually saw that. Yeah. As well. Yeah,
that's insane. So, looking just to give people praise more consistently. So, in going back to your point, yeah, I've felt imposter syndrome before. I think it's so natural just to draw comparisons. And if you aren't someone that's always in the limelight, or you aren't always the top achiever in something, there seems to be so much doubt cast if you're not, let's say, the creme de la creme of something.
Yes.
So
yes,
in sports, you're given a good example of MVP.
Yeah, no, well, I think they say, I also read a stat about 70% of people have at some point felt a sense of imposter syndrome. And then I was just doing a little bit of digging, like as to why people would experience it even when they were successful. And I came across three main reasons. I wanted to see if you could think of which one of these three best relates to you, if one of the three, if not. So the first one is a sense of having a perfectionist or a sense of perfectionism as an individual. So if everything's not quite perfect, it's not right or not good enough. So that's often a reason that people will feel imposter syndrome. So for example, at our graduation ceremony, the whole thing ran perfectly smooth until right at the end. We hadn't practiced like walking out, so it was a little bit like sketchy at the end. Not as sketchy, but it just didn't run as smoothly as the rest of it. And you know, like I felt like I focused on that when I'm like, okay, but this was a 2.5 hour ceremony and you got 2 minutes of it, and it wasn't even wrong, it just wasn't it wasn't something else, right? It wasn't that I did the wrong thing. It just wasn't something. It was what it was. And I focused on this 2 minute part of a 2 hour and 30 minute graduation that was full of like different sound cues. There was videos that had to play at the same time. I was MC. I was coordinating 25 students to get them onto stage at the right time when they needed to know to get ready to go. I was coordinating with like our head of school to when he must go on. So it was a lot of moving parts, and I'm focusing on this 2 minutes. So that's the perfectionist part. The second part would be your upbringing, where not necessarily in a bad way, but you could have been brought up without, like you say, perhaps receiving the sort of praise that would help you in this scenario. And again, it's not a shot at any parents or anything like that. It's just, you know, sometimes even culturally, that it's just, you know, just the way it is. We don't do praises. Some cultures, some families just don't do that. You know, it's like some moms don't tell their kids that they love them because, you know, that I love you because I feed you. You know, like that's just the way it is. And then the third one is comparisons. When we compare, like I did at the beginning now when we were talking about NATO. But then I read this really cool thing, like, but, you know, imposter syndrome happens when you compare someone else's highlight reel to your blooper reel, you know, because that's what we do. You compare when you did something wrong, you compare that to when somebody did something perfectly, which is unrealistic. And then also just a fun fact, minority groups, women, people of color, etc., feel imposter syndrome more because it's subliminally built in to just to the structure of society. So I just thought that was pretty interesting, which brought up a further conversation for me, as like I felt like as a white male, a straight white male, I'm not entitled to feel these things. But I think that's an episode of by itself, you know, that I think there's a lot of digging we can
do. That's a deep dive there.
But that we need if you could think, what do you think the reason is? If you could think, not maybe for you, or which one of those three things maybe do you think is the most relatable for you? Perfectionism, upbringing, comparisons.
I think you highlighted, I think probably two of the three. So for me personally, I'm trying to still get an understanding of whether the perfectionist mentality or where that is based and whether that originated. Like, why is there so much focus on it being perfect and not just being good? So as the example that you've given, you've had a perfect ceremony up until the 2 minuter. And holistically, if we take everything into consideration, it was a really good, it was a perfect, essentially, event. So for me, I struggle with perfection sometimes, wanting to be faultless. I think maybe the thought of criticism is something that needs to be looked into. Maybe I guess not getting or defining it as not being constructive criticism. Maybe there was an instance where this became a thing and criticism was just not taken well. I'd say comparison, and it's actually funny because I had a conversation with Lisa not too long ago, but generally, siblings have a lot of comparisons being done innately. So especially when it's from my experience being the younger sibling, I always look to match my brother's accolades. My brother is a very smart individual. So when he got top 10 at school, I tried to achieve top 10. My brother started a sport, I tried to get into the sport and match up to him, which I think is
more often than not a positive thing.
Okay.
Because what I took from that is that I had a basis to work to, and I constantly had motivation to achieve certain things. So I don't necessarily think it is a bad thing, but I can see how in that you almost lose a bit of individuality or less time in the spotlight to actually just give yourself praise for whatever you're doing in the capacity that you're doing it at. But I enjoyed having someone or something to work towards, you know, as that motivational force behind me. So for me, were there instances where I felt like I had imposter syndrome? Definitely. Like, he was killing it on the math front, science front, English, whatever. I think I got like 5 distinctions in matric, and I only got, I think, 2, 3, you know, like, come on, man.
You see, you done now so you're, much sitting, you're saying only got, damn. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Only. And that's, again, a case of not looking at my own achievements and saying, you've got a distinction. Got more than one distinction here. Well done. Pat on the back.
You touched on something really, really interesting there. And I wanted to ask you, I think you already gave one example, but can this imposter syndrome thing be a good thing? So like you said there, you have this comparison thing where, you know, not that, you know, I know like your brother was head boy. You became head boy. He was good at sport. You were good at sport. You said that him pushing himself academically made you push yourself academically. So do you think that this feeling of imposter syndrome can be a good thing, like this, maybe recognizing that it's there and like kind of harnessing it?
I do think so. I think, and we'll allude to this now with the next point, but I think imposter syndrome is a basis to keep ourselves humble and to almost always drive us to constantly keep ourselves in check, both ability-wise and in terms of where we see ourselves, I guess, mapping out our lives. So in the professional front, if I constantly, honestly, criticize myself, but there's a tiny seed of doubt in my ability, that's going to force me to always be on my A game, to constantly kind of push through doing the extra mile in order to be top of my game, in order to make sure that I am irreplaceable, that I am such a key, I guess, figure in whatever my organization is, that I'll never be resting on my laurels. So I'm never going to be phased out because I don't have the abilities, complacency. What about you?
No, I completely agree. So like if we look at the example of even the graduation ceremony, for example, like if I were to have to organize and host this thing again next year, what will I do? I'll make sure that we practice our exit as well, right? So like, yes, I got this amount of things working well, but if I didn't, if it was just like, no, it's all good, it was perfect, or if you have this idea that it went perfectly, if you didn't feel this imposter syndrome thing, like, I mean, I guess reflection doesn't necessarily mean imposter syndrome, but I think basically it can be a good thing if you don't, if it prevents you from getting complacent, you harness that idea of like, you know what? I do notice what I've done wrong. I can improve on it. I think the challenge comes when it becomes like something that completely overshadows everything else. Like you can't see what was good there. You know, eventually I watched the highlight reel of the touch game and I was like, damn right I was MVP. You damn right I was. Eventually, my initial feeling was like, okay, no, imposter syndrome. And I was like, okay, whoa, take a step back. Let's watch the highlights, check the stats. I was like, actually, you were MVP. Well done. So I think as long as you recognize that it's there, acknowledge it, and then use that as a platform to move forward, I think that's actually where it can be a good thing. You know what I'm saying?
On that, would you say that you overcame the imposter syndrome was the reassurance with it being objective, as in you were left alone to review footage that didn't have subjective commentary to say, oh, Tyler, you're great. Almost like for me, sometimes I don't take the compliment as true. As being true or
yeah,
objective in nature. It's almost subjective, yeah. Almost like we all hate being fluffed. Like, oh, you know, great job, Tyler. You did so well. And let's say you've gotten a 70% for your previous exam, as an example. Silly example. And you're like, oh, yeah, you're just saying that. You're just saying that because you're trying to make me feel good for not having achieved the distinction, as an example. And it's so hard sometimes to separate what's being said from, or rather tying the two together, what's being said to both being true and not necessarily just being subjective or
a case of being flubbed. What helps me in that instance, and this is actually a bad thing, and I'm sure you've experienced it as well, but like sometimes it's not always about what's being said, but it's also about who's saying it. So I'm sure you've had times before, I won't speak on your behalf, I'll speak on my own behalf, where maybe Katya has told me something and I'm like, yeah, like I kind of listen, but I kind of don't, because I'm like, you're just saying that because you're my wife and you're just saying that, right? And then someone else tells me exactly the same thing. And I'm like, oh yeah, like makes me, I feel so like, you don't have to tell me that because you're not my wife, or you're not my, you know, like you don't have to tell me that. And you are telling me that, you know, and that's, you know, like, you know, Katya taught a yoga class on Tuesday and it was amazing. I went to it and I enjoyed it. And afterwards I told her, I was like, I really enjoyed that. And she didn't feel so good about it. But then one of her other friends was also there and she told her a whole bunch of stuff. And I actually said to Katya afterwards, when she was feeling a bit like, oh, it could have gone better, I said to her, you know, that your friend didn't have to say everything that she did. And the fact that she did, she didn't just compliment you, she pointed it out. So sometimes it is also about who is saying the thing, you know. Sometimes it's also like your partner will be like, oh, you should watch this TV show. And you're like, nah, I don't want to. And then someone that is your close friend can be like, yo, this TV show's sick. And then, yeah, you go back and then, you know, she's been angry at me before. She's like, I told you to watch this thing like 3 months ago. I told you, you know. Anyway, I'm getting a bit distracted. How about the concept of fake it till you make it? Because I thought about this. I then did some research, and then there's the opposite side of imposter syndrome, and it's called the Dunning-Kruger effect, right? And what this is basically it's type of cognitive bias where people believe that they are smarter or more capable than they actually are. So where imposter syndrome, you doubt your capabilities, the Dunning-Kruger effect is you overestimate or you over-index your abilities, right? And we know the famous saying, fake it till you make it, right? You get, there's a job interview or a job position you're not experienced. People say, apply for it, get the job and learn. Just fake it till you make it. So let's deal with that first. Before we talk about the Dunning-Kruger effect, fake it till you make it, vibe it.
I think fake it till you make it comes with a caveat that there still needs to be learning being done. I think the faking it part cannot be a one-step solution. You can't be like, my CV, I'm putting like, I have done ample research into the marketing capabilities of Netflix. I see the growth patterns being XYZ. Like I throw it all into ChatGPT. Gives me TV there. Yes, it's glistening the way there's so much gold in the CV. I hand that CV in, the prospective recruiter reads through and it's like, wow, perfect. You're the guy for the job, man. You got this. We have to hire you. Can you start today? Oh, I'm in it. As soon as you get there, you're. So what do I do now? Where is the Windows button? Like, because there wasn't any, I guess, continuous growth or learning happening between the application stage versus when I got the job. I think more often than not, the fake it till you make it needs to have a caveat to say, in the process of faking it, learn actual attainable skills. Okay. Or,
so you still need to work at it so that you
still need to work
towards
it.
Making
but
it.
But I agree that comes back down to a confidence thing in my eyes. And I found a video recently about what confidence, a woman broke down what confidence actually is. And she said that confidence is action. So confidence is knowing that even if I try and I fail, that's fine because I have tried it. So that's the differentiating fact between confident people and non-confident people, is the willingness to try something and not care about how devastating or seemingly devastating this action would be. So I think from a confidence point of view, fake it till you make it is so key. If you can hype yourself up to believe that you're able to do something,
yeah,
you'd be able to get it done. Somebody, and this is a stupid example, but I think it was 2 episodes ago where you said, are you ever feeling down? And is there a way in which you can line up
when
your
you
sweat?
Smile? When you smile,
did the fake
in the
smile.
Mirror.
Yeah. Translated. I tried it. I was in front of the mirror, smiling. Yeah, it's a crap day. Okay, it's not so bad. Okay, there's some joy in this day, man. I can
eventually
look forward to
yeah,
and see.
Okay.
This is what. It's not such a bad day after all. So fake it till you make it, I think, is still a very.
It has some place, but I quite like what you said about still having to. I really like the idea of still having to. While you're faking it, make sure you do the work so that you can make it. You know, like, even if you get into that position, okay, sure, now you got it, but now also stop faking and start working, kind of thing, you know, like, if that makes sense. And then my last question before I get into the wholesome moment is, like I said, there's that Dunning-Kruger effect where you overestimate your abilities. Now, I think we have worked with or been around both sides of people, right? You have people that need support and reassurance, and then you have people that need, let's call it, some humbling. And funny enough, I think I've been both people. So what do you think? What do you think is like a, I guess, easier personality trait to either work with or be around, or because I think it can be taxing. Like if you have, I don't want to say this in the wrong way, I don't want to offend anyone, but it can be taxing. Like if you always have to build someone up, like every time you see someone and they talk to you, they're like, oh, I'm so sad. Like, you know, it can be very taxing to you as a friend to constantly be like, oh, come on, man. Like, we all need it sometimes, but if you always have to do it, it gets a lot. But similarly, it can also be difficult to be around someone that's like, yo, I'm a G. I've never played this game before, but I bet you I'll whoop you even though you've been playing it for like 10 years. Like, so which personality type do you think is like kind of easier to deal with if you had to kind of suss?
I think I definitely take the imposter syndrome individual to deal with. I think guys who are on the, what did you call it? The Dunning-Kruger. People who suffer from the Dunning-Kruger are a lot harder to bring back down to earth. It's almost like they're closed off, man. Once they believe that they're the MVPs of this world, that they're the G of Gs, there's no one else that can tell them otherwise, despite who you are. And I find that a lot harder to deal with in people who need constant encouragement. Personally, I definitely go for working with the imposter syndrome individual. What about you?
You know, the thing is, like, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, it's a similar, I guess not, no, that's a bad example. But what I think about this, it's also like a positive negative thing, right? So if someone has imposter syndrome, you have to think of positive reinforcement to bring that person up, right? You have to think of like real nice things to say, and not necessarily to lie, but you have to think about positive things to tell this person to make them feel better. Whereas with the Dunning-Kruger effect, because I was thinking as you were talking, I'm like, okay, so how do we humble these people? Oh, so if they say they're really good at this game, basically you whoop their ass at the game and then bring them down. But it has more of a negative way of kind of coming to a solution. So because I'm in general, I like to think I'm a more of a positive person. I think I agree. Like, I'd rather look at a person and think, what nice things can I say about you or to you to make you feel better about yourself? As opposed to like looking at someone and being like, what nasty thing can I say to you? Not that I think about it like that, but how can I bring you down? You know, you would have to, sometimes when you see people like that, you're like, okay, let them be. Like, they're gonna, I'd much rather leave a person like that and just not talk to them than if I know someone and they're feeling down, I'm more ready to go to that person and be like, hey, like, you actually really did play well, like, today. Like, go and have a look at the highlight reels. I won't say anything, but just look at everything that you did. It's so much easier to do that job. I feel so much better inside of myself by doing that job than trying to think of a way to bring someone down.
It's hard, I mean? Man. It's hard because no one wants to be the bad guy in the situation. But I think in what you had said previously with who people hear these things from, it has to then end up being the person that's closest to this individual. And it's a tough conversation. I mean, you never want to be seen as the bad individual or the one that's delivering the bad news. But there needs to be, we always, like you said, put this person into the world and say, well, someone's going to tell him along the way. Not going to be me, but it's going to be someone that's going to eventually going to sit them down and say, hey, look, real talk here.
You got to calm down.
You need to understand.
Yeah.
You're not this person and you have your faults. I think, putting that mirror up to see is always a hard spot.
It's all about finding this balance, you know. But I thought let's end off with a nice little wholesome moment. So I saw a really, really cool article in doing the research for this episode, and it's about Serena Williams. So I thought I would just read a quick little part of it where she dealt with imposter syndrome. So Serena Williams, one of the greatest tennis players of all time, has achieved unparalleled success throughout her career. We know that. However, behind her remarkable achievements, Williams has battled with imposter syndrome, questioning her worth and talent on multiple occasions. Despite her numerous Grand Slam victories and widespread recognition as an exceptional athlete, Williams has often felt like she didn't belong among the tennis elite. In interviews, she has spoken openly about her struggles with self-doubt and feeling like an imposter in a sport dominated by players with different backgrounds and experiences. Rather than letting imposter syndrome hinder her, Williams used it as a fuel to prove herself wrong. She became determined to work even harder, constantly pushing her limits both physically and mentally. Williams dedicated herself to rigorous training, fine-tuning her technique, and studying her opponent's game meticulously. By channeling her self-doubt into a relentless pursuit of excellence, Williams has managed to shatter records and redefine the standards of women's tennis. She continues to win Grand Slam titles and secure her place among the sport's legends. Williams encourages aspiring athletes to recognize their worth regardless of their backgrounds or doubts. She believes that imposter syndrome can serve as a catalyst for personal growth and that by persevering through self-doubt, individuals can unlock their true potential. And I really think that's just such a nice way, you know, like anyone can experience it. I mean, we're talking about Serena Williams here, right? And I just thought it was a nice thing to kind of, you know, like it's not a whataboutism, but it's like, it's kind of like, people that are listening right now, just know, and you feel, if you're listening to us and you're like, oh, I can relate to that, just know, so can Serena Williams. So can so many others. I think the greatest athletes and the greatest and most successful people in the world can relate to this feeling of imposter syndrome.
Most definitely. And it's such an incredible bit of content there that you're hearing this from a person that's had to probably deal with the hardest hurdles in order to accomplish what she has as a minority, as a black woman in sport, in a sport that isn't generally considered for her ethnicity, for her background. And she's the GOAT. There isn't anyone that has any more or any more titles than she does in the history of the sport. So, man, if she's going through it, then who are we to sit in our state of all imposter syndrome?
For sure. And I think to end off the episode, I'd like to ask everyone to help Tev and I not feel like imposters anymore. So please like and share and subscribe to the video. You see what I did there? I like how I dropped that little one in there.
Throw in the comments there. Throw in a comment or two.
Yeah, because we do sometimes have a feeling of like, is what we're doing working? Are people enjoying it? It's very easy when you put, and I think that's another thing about the whole thing. It's very easy when you put yourself out there to feel this kind of way, you know, with these high expectations, and it naturally comparisons, you draw your own comparisons. So please like, share, and subscribe to the channel. We will keep doing this until we get it right. We will keep faking it until we make it, but you can be certain we are learning as we go along. And I personally look forward to seeing you all next week. I think that's all from me. Tev, anything to lock down?
That's it. You've summed it up perfectly. We'll see you again next week. Thank you for your ears and eyes, man.
Let's go, Splash Brothers.
Cheers.
Swish, swish.